Welcome to Goonie's World. My name is Goonie, also known as Colin, and I am joined by Johnny Farrow, also known as Sean.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Lunicorn, also known as Lynn.
Hello.
And Meanie, also known as Ryan.
Hello, everybody.
And Sean, you're the GM. Why don't you tell us what we're playing today?
Yes, today we're playing Top Men. We're using Fudge, the original old Fudge book by Stephen O'Sullivan, which is really, if you have it, you know, it's just, it's not even a unified system. It's just like a gigantic book of ideas and different ways you could do it. So we have come up with a very stripped down and simple version of Fudge. So in the world of Top Men, our characters are the so-called Top Men, which is a secret unit of the U.S. government, dedicated to acquiring historical artifacts of great power. Now, this unit's been active since 1936, when the U.S. acquired the Ark of the Covenant. And at that time, as many of you know, Top Men researched it and confirmed its great power. Who? Top Men. So although the Ark was safe, the Allied powers couldn't risk Nazis getting hold of some other potent relic. So the Top Men were formalized as a unit. And then later in World War II, the Top Men were subsumed into the operations of the Monuments, Fine Arts, and Archives program, the so-called Monuments Men, but they operated off the books and in secret. And by the end of World War II, the Top Men had secured the Spear of Destiny and the Ulfbert Sword and the Pushpaka Vimana, a flying machine. The Nazi threat was over, but the new Soviet threat was in full force. So when the State Department dissolved the Monuments Men in 1946, the Top Men were secretly retained. And so now, about a dozen years after the war in the 1950s, the work of the Top Men continues as they race to save history's most mysterious artifacts from nefarious agents and criminal masterminds and Soviets and other threats. Keep in mind, the Top Men have no legal enforcement powers. They don't officially represent the U.S. government because they officially don't exist. And if they get into trouble, it's unlikely the Marines will come to the rescue, but I don't think we'll need the Marines to rescue our brave Top Men. So I think what we'll do before we really leap in is let our characters introduce themselves. So why don't we stand? You could do it in character or not, but it's a good time to get into voice, get into character. So why don't we start with Goonie? Tell us about your character.
Yeah, so my character is Stuart Grant. You can call him Stu. His code name is Black Cavendish because he is always smoking Black Cavendish tobacco. He's always got a pipe in his mouth. And he is an educated man. He's originally from Wichita, Kansas. And then he went to Yale, and he might have been part of a certain secret society in Yale. And then he was recruited into the OSS during the war. And then he was, you know, from there he was recruited into the Top Men. And he's basically the brains of our little group. I think he's got the greatest scholarship. He's got great scholarship, and I believe that is him.
All right, yeah, and this is a good time for me to interject. You say he's got great scholarship. Those familiar with Fudge or Fate, which has adopted a lot of what Fudge was, we have a ladder of adjectives, you know, that define our characters from superb all the way down to terrible. We have three stats in this version of Fudge. We have adventure and combat and scholarship. And let's talk to somebody who's probably best in combat. Ryan, tell us about your character.
Well, he's originally from my farm in rural Nebraska. When the, you know, United States joined the war, he quickly, you know, rushed off to Omaha to volunteer because he was deathly afraid that the war would end before he could get through basic training and get there. Which, when he finally got there, he realized that was a very, very naive attitude to have because war is not pleasant by any stretch of the imagination. So he, you know, fought in the Pacific Theater and whatnot. And obviously the war ended. He came back and sought employment in the federal government and was recruited into the Top Men via the INR. And his code name, Mr. Smith, because he literally just carries so many guns on his person all the time. I mean, he's got like dual shoulder holsters, dual like calf holsters. He's got like hip holsters in his utility belt. I mean, the guy is just literally, he's got guns up his ass. I mean, he's just guns everywhere all the time. He's very American in that way, I suppose. But yeah, that's him. You know, I imagine him. He's around 6 foot with short crop. He's kept the Marine buzz cut from his military days and blonde hair and always kind of wearing a suit these days, I think.
So we've met our great scholar. We've met our excellent combatant. But we also need to meet somebody who is skilled in the arts of adventure themselves. Adventure being this nebulous ability that kind of that accounts for everything else that one might do out there. So, Lynn, can you tell us all about your character?
All right. My character is Agent 13, or just 13. She was, like most women in World War II, she entered the military as a nurse. And at some point, she's in the European theater, When their medical unit was cut off from supplies by the Germans, 13 planned and executed a raid on a German supply depot. That was when the government learned that her skills made her more useful as a secret agent than as a nurse. She's very, very sneaky and flippy and likes to do covert ops type things. So she was then recruited by a secret branch of the military specializing in secret ops. And then after the war, that's when she was recruited by the Top Men organization.
Awesome.
She is blonde, long blonde, straight hair, wears a fedora, sunglasses, secret agent-y looking, just classic, very archetypal kind of look, but when she's working for the Top Men, of course she's wearing a suit.
That's right. Well, Top Men need to look sharp no matter what else they're doing. Well, we might as well just jump right in. This promises to be an epic adventure. We expect it to stretch across about 6 episodes, so we're going to jump right in, and we're going to start at an undisclosed location somewhere in the Atlantic seaboard of the United States. It's where you usually meet for your briefings with the chief, as you call him. We're never going to say exactly where this location is. You know, it's secret even from us. But it's a huge room, like an airplane hangar-style room that you find yourselves in. And you already know each other. You're a unit. You usually work as a trio. And there's a cone of light coming down from the ceiling of this great big hangar-like room. And in that cone of light is a desk and some chairs. The desk has a coffee service on it and many ashtrays, you know, because even if you don't smoke Black Cavendish in your pipe, this is the 50s, so everybody smokes all the time in all situations. At the movies, on planes, everywhere. It's good for you. That's why doctors advertise cigarettes in the
Well, doctors prescribe my tobacco.
Black Cavendish. That's right. That's right. It's good for the nerves. Anyway, you all come in and sit down and nod to each other, and eventually the chief comes out from the darkness. He's a heavy set man with slick back hair. He kind of resembles like a cross between Jabba the Hutt and Dracula. He heaves his bulk into a great big armchair and gestures, you know, at the ashtrays. He himself lights a cigarette. He's got a cigarette holder because he's classy. And he's about 10, 15 years older than you guys, but you know he was a big wig during the war. You're just not even sure exactly who he is. He said, gentlemen, lady, I'm very pleased to see you all in good health, especially after the affair in Aqaba when you recovered the so-called Ring of Aladdin. I do admire the way you snatched it out from under the nose of that vile mercenary archaeologist Jan Donville. I don't think he'll forgive you for that anytime soon. He's referencing, of course, a Belgian archaeologist named Jan Donville, who you guys have tangled with before. He's kind of a renegade, and he's helped the Soviets a few times. But now to today's business. I wonder, you're the scholars in the room, what can you tell me about the lost tomb of Alexander the Great?
Well, why don't we start with the man himself, who was quite the genius. Many believed he was a living god. I mean, he conquered Greece, the Persian Empire, and many other kingdoms. His realm stretched from the Mediterranean Sea to India. And he died in Babylon in 323 BC at just 32 years old. Most scholars believe he died of a fever, but there is some evidence that he was poisoned. As far as the tomb of Alexander the Great, I believe he wanted to be buried at Siwa in Egypt at the temple of Zeus Amon, and his body was placed in a coffin of hammered gold shaped to his body. Mm-hmm. But, yes, after his generals split up his empire into smaller kingdoms, they argued over who would take possession of his body.
Indeed.
And they did not honor his wish to be buried at Siwa, and they agreed to take his body back to their homeland of Macedonia. And then, on the way, General Ptolemy, who of course ruled Egypt, hijacked the funeral train to take the body to Egypt. And there it was originally buried in Memphis, but by 274 BC, the body was moved to a tomb in Alexandria, which is the city of Alexander founded and designed, probably the most important city in Egypt. The gold coffin was replaced with a coffin of glass, and it was said that Alexander's body did not rot.
Yes, well, it seems that I'm speaking with the right people. 13, can you tell us anything more about what happened after that?
Well, there are several historical references after that date. In 48 BC, it is said that Julius Caesar visited the tomb to pay his respects. Shortly after, Cleopatra took gold from the tomb to finance wars against Octavian. And then when she died, Octavian, who we now call Augustus, visited the tomb and placed flowers
Very
upon
respectful.
It.
How sweet.
And then much later, the mad Emperor Caligula looted the tomb and took Alexander's breastplate.
I believe in... I'm sorry to cut you off. I believe in 199 AD, the Emperor Septimus Severus ordered that the tomb be sealed up.
Yes, and then in 215 AD, the Emperor Caracalla reopened the tomb and took several items, including Alexander's ring.
Yes, and so about 380 AD, the Emperor Theodosius I opened the tomb and looted it.
Mm-hmm. And by 400 AD, the early Christian philosopher John Chrysostom visited Alexandria and tried to see the tomb, but no one knew where it was.
Interesting, interesting. Now, I know that scholarship is not necessarily your strongest point, Mr. Smith, but can you tell me anything about what has happened since then, after the ancient world? Were there any sightings in closer to the modern era?
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't even know how these crazy cats know all this stuff. I was going to ask a couple questions, if I might.
Feel free to ask questions.
You mentioned Macedonia there, Stu, and now that's when you say Macedonia, that's Greece, right?
It is Greece, yes. That is.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yes.
Just making sure. And you mentioned Alexandria. Now, that's in Egypt, right?
That is in Egypt. That is the great city that Alexander the Great founded.
What? So I was kind of surprised they didn't call it Alexandria. But anyway, there was a library there, right? It burned down?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. You're referring to the Library of Alexandria. Unfortunately, it did burn. Oh, priceless manuscripts were lost in that burning. It's a tragedy, historical tragedy.
Indeed.
Well, I'm afraid that's kind of all I really know. I know that Alexandria is in Egypt, and I know that Greece used to be called Macedonia, and I know that Alexander the Great was a guy who did things and had an empire and stuff,
Well,
that's kind of all
I know. That is about it.
That is about it. Of course, there have been some...
There's some later references,
yes, there are a few
later. Scholars
They're dubious.
That is true. That is true.
Yes.
All we can say for certain is that after Emperor Theodosius looted the tomb in 380 AD, we lose track of Alexander's tomb and his body. It's one of the holy grails of archaeology, as you know. They're, of course,
one of the holy grails.
One
I would
of
say
many.
The holy grail is the holy grail of archaeology.
Indeed. Indeed. That's my understanding there. Yes. Anyway. To get on to more pertinent business, legend did have, there's some later references from Marcus Sardonicus, the Byzantine writer, that Theodosius had taken a key to Alexander's tomb as well, and as well as a map on the back of Alexander's breastplate of the entire ancient city of Alexandria, which supposedly has several important sites marked on it. Unfortunately, this breastplate was lost, presumably looted by Theodosius. So, I'm impressed with all your knowledge, and of course I'll have a dossier forwarded to you, Mr. Smith, for your reading pleasure on the airplane, because you will be traveling soon. But it seems to us that Theodosius is the place to start. Now, he left all of his material wealth to his son, Theodosius II, who was buried in Constantinople. Now, his body was later moved by his sister to Rome, but only his body. No mention is made of any grave goods. Now, recently, U.S. intelligence intercepted a Soviet communique dispatching a team to Istanbul, which, as you know, was once called Constantinople. So...
Can't go back to Constantinople.
No, and it's nobody's business but the Turks. But, anyway, this communique about the team being dispatched to Constantinople, or Istanbul, contained a reference to Alexander's breastplate that the writer Marcus Sardonicus spoke of. Now, this was 48 hours ago, so there is no time to spare. I need you to pack your things and prepare for a trip to Istanbul. Now, when you arrive, contact Mustafa Ibrahim. He is our man in the Turkish Department of Antiquities, and he can direct you to the former tomb of Theodosius II. Now, I don't need to tell you that tensions are high right now between the U.S. and the Soviets over the Straits of the Dardanelles, and you will control access between the Black Sea and the Mediterranean. So please do your best to avoid an international incident or any embarrassments. Do you have any questions before you go?
I don't believe I have any questions.
Well, I have a lot of questions, but I suppose most of them will be answered by the dossier, because this is not an area that I'm super familiar with. I probably should be more familiar, considering this is my job, but I'm really just the muscles. So.
That's right. Your skills will become apparent soon enough. In fact, we hope that you will not be needed at all, and you will merely be decorative window dressing. Well, with that, we'll wrap up our meeting with the chief. And we assume you rush home, back to your places, get packed, and you do board a commercial flight. And after a...
13 doesn't need to pack. She's always ready to
always
go.
Always packed.
Yeah. That's right. She's got a go bag.
You do board a long commercial flight, you know, and the map shows the red line of your flight as it goes across the Atlantic Ocean. After it stops in London and then Rome, you eventually do find yourselves whisked away to the ancient city of Istanbul. As we said, formerly Constantinople, formerly Byzantium, whatever you call it. It's a place of mystery. It's a bridge between Europe and Asia. And it's a playground of many intrigues during the Cold War. It's not fully allied with either, you know, the West or the Soviet Union. So you arrive at night. And, of course, you have the address for Mustafa Ibrahim, who's your contact here, who's supposed to lead you further. And as you take a taxi through the crowded streets, you can't help but marvel at the towering Byzantine spires and onion-shaped domes of mosques and basilicas and the ancient walls of the Emperor Justinian, all juxtaposed with more or less modern businesses and nightclubs and hotels and markets and bazaars. There's tiny little German and Turkish cars zipping around everywhere, and plenty of foot traffic as well. There's still plenty of people out, even though it's dark. The taxi lets you off at an old six-story apartment building, but it's obviously just converted from a much older structure. Those of you who are highly educated would date this structure back to perhaps the 17th century, and it has modern steel buttresses and restorations on it to keep it from collapse. The building next door, in fact, has been demolished, and there's this great big pile of rubble next door to this building. There's a huge construction crane still on that lot, sticking out, almost touching the roof of this building. And you get up to the cab lets you off, and you pay him a few Turkish coins. And there's a bit of foot traffic on the street. There's a cafe nearby, and there's a few people sitting out having a late evening drink or meal on sidewalk. There's a display that shows who lives in what apartment. You can see Mustafa Ibrahim's in apartment 602, but you ring the buzzer and there's no answer.
Sure,
you wait for 5-10 minutes and there's no answer.
This should be the right address.
Yes, this is quite odd.
Well,
perhaps we should go investigate.
Well, I just had the thought, I don't know if this place is being watched. I'm suddenly getting very paranoid. But, well, take a look around very subtly, see if anyone's watching us.
Okay. Now you take a close look around. Very subtly, do a little pack your pipe, look inconspicuous. And go ahead and make an adventure roll. And I'd say if anyone was hidden, they obviously wouldn't be standing out in plain sight, so I'd need a great result on this if you were going to see anybody, if there's anyone to see.
Okay. And my adventure is good. I'm using this fudge die roller. And, well, my result is good as well.
Okay. You feel quite confident that that there's no one out there. You don't see anybody. And there's a few people that, you know, as I say, there's a few people over by well, let me put it this way. You can certainly see everybody that's out there. You can't tell if they're watching you or not. But as I say, there's a few people out at the tables of the cafe. There are two guys who are changing flat tire of a little Soviet car. And a couple walking in the rain. There's an old man and old woman sitting on a bench. Gosh, you know, if you're feeling really paranoid, either one, any of those people or all of them could be spies.
They could be communists.
So, they could be. So is this a, this is a, like, an apartment building, yes?
Yeah, it's like, basically like a great big old semi-palace of sorts, you know, from the, it's about 17th century, but it's since been converted into apartments. They probably got large rooms. Looks like there's about 12 units in the building, two on each floor.
And okay, and so we know what unit.
Yeah, he's 602 top.
Our contact
is 602 top floor.
So, okay, I suppose the first thing that we should do is check the main door to see if it's locked.
Yeah, it is locked. Somebody went upstairs. You know, would have to buzz you in.
Okay. So very surreptitiously, I shall get out lockpicks.
Okay.
And attempt to pick the lock on the building.
All right. So
I will.
Now this is a. Go ahead.
I will shield her from view.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to hold up a finger and look for a fire escape.
Okay, okay. There's not one out on the front, but if you were to, like, take a little stroll...
Well, I'm assuming, yeah. I mean, on the sides of, like, the building.
Yeah, actually, you take walk around. On one side of the building, it's just piles of rubble. On the other side, there's a very narrow alley. And in the back, there's not a fire escape, per se, like a zigzaggy stairway going all the way up. With doors, not for each apartment, but for each back hallway. You know, like three, there's six floors, and there's a central doorway on each floor in the back. So if you were to, you could get out, you know, through the back. There's no fire escapes leading directly up to individual rooms, but there is a back way out through the central hallways on each floor.
Well, I don't know. I don't know, guys. We can either pick the lock and go in that way, or we can take the stairs and possibly have to pick the lock on the sixth floor to get up there. I don't know what the best thing to do is, but
well, certainly
I'm happy to go with whatever.
Yeah, you've given yourself choices, that's for sure. Probably a little less conspicuous in the back.
That's true.
Wes, why don't we go around back if there's a easier way in without, you know, forcing our way in. We'll do that, and then we'll see about his room and whether we can get in there.
Okay. You guys make your way down the very narrow alley, go around to the back of the building, and go up the rickety... Well, you're not rickety, but there's like a clanging sound, you know, as you go up the stairs. You have to walk really carefully if you don't make a lot of noise. But you know what? It's the city at night. There's all kinds of noise around here. People go up and downstairs. But you get up to the sixth. And again, it is locked, as you suspected. But there's no one around here that you can see to shield it from. The only thing you can see from back here is just kind of a narrow courtyard with the backs of some other buildings. There's no one out there right now. The view is obscured with lots of crisscrossing lines of laundry, you know, going over the courtyard. You can hear a tinkling fountain from somewhere down below, about six floors down. But no one to watch you. You pick the lock. There's nothing special at all about the lock. It's just standard grade, and so you only need a good adventure result to open that lock.
Oh, wow! I got above superb.
You got above superb. Yeah, and we call it like superb plus one. In some fudge versions, they call it like astounding or super. You know, like
legendary.
All kinds of legendary. But anyway. You very easily get it open, just like nothing. And you can see the hallway. It leads down to a central elevator. It's obviously been put in much, much later, but it's one of those cage-style elevators with the sliding, you know, collapsible doors and another stairway. But this back way is taking you up not that far from two doors, one on either side. 602, the door is ajar. The door to 602 is ever so slightly ajar.
Well, this can't be good.
I think we've got trouble.
Yes.
Well, if you're in trouble, who do you want to send in first?
Well, I'm instantly. Mr. Smith is drawing a gun and going into the whole, like, pointing the gun at the floor and stealthily, like, clearing every angle mode, you know.
Of course. Well, you get down there and poke your head. You deftly poke your head around the door, right, and go in. Aim. The lights are on. And inside, you see the place is just a shambles. And a man, presumably Mustafa, there's a little photo of him in your dossier. You know, he's a public official. He's lying in a puddle of blood next to an ottoman and a hookah in the middle of the room. Because he's from Turkey, right? His furniture's got to be an ottoman and a hookah. We're just setting the scene here. But, his throat's been slit, obviously. And he had a desk nearby in here. All the drawers have been pulled out of it and emptied. But you, Mr. Smith, here, there's a hall that kind of leads back down deeper into the apartment, into the flat, probably to a bedroom, you know. And from back there, you can hear a little creak as if someone's shifted their weight on a floorboard.
Well, I was just about to have my character scream, "There's a frog in here!" just because I thought it would be funny, but because that sounded like a frog. But yeah, no, I won't do that. Okay. Well, he will. You know, he's got the gun to the floor sort of thing. He's going to bring it up to actual shot level and very slowly and carefully creep up to, sort of the corner.
So that he could see into wherever this is?
Like, no. Well, he's attempting to... I might not be... like visualizing this correctly, but what he would like to do is sidle up to like a wall to where he could come, like where he can't see anything necessarily, but where he could very quickly come around the corner, flip around the corner with a gun pointed.
Yeah, so yeah. I think that sounds great. Now to get across, you know, the old room quietly, I think requires a roll. This is a combat roll, though, so it's in your wheelhouse. Moving quietly and silently up to an enemy, certainly within the realm of combat. Meanwhile, I'm assuming you two are going to chill in the hall for a moment.
Well, I'm going to...
Legendary.
Okay, I'm going to draw my revolver, but I'm not going to enter the room. I am going to get to the side, you know, of the doorway and get a view in so I can see what's going on.
Yeah, you can see Mr. Smith creeping down the hallway... legendarily, you know, which I'm assuming is like superb, blah, blah, blah. The only time the exact increments of above superb are ever going to matter is in combat, you know, so yeah. But when you say legendary, is that like one higher than superb? Let's just go ahead and call it that.
Yeah.
That is indeed. Yes. And then, so the little web-based dice roller I'm using, it goes superb, then legendary, then legendary plus one, plus two.
Whatever. Okay,
so,
okay. Yeah. All right. Well, you legendarily, I mean, absolutely silently. And you're just on the other side of the door. Then you hear another, like a sliding, smooth sound as if a window is opening inside that room.
Well, as soon as that starts, he's busting around the corner.
You bust around the corner. You got to look at a pale face underneath a stocking cap, a thin, pencil-thin mustache, and a gold tooth, holding a dagger in his hand, and he tries to leap out the window. So, I think there's no need for rolling initiative here, because you were, like, all ready to go. You could try to charge forward and grab him, or you could take a shot at him, or what do you want to do?
Well, I mean, it's Mr. Smith. He's going to just try to shoot him in the ass, follow the blood trail later.
Shoot him in the ass and follow the blood trail later. Okay, go for it. He's going to try to not get hit, you know. He starts to dodge out the window, making his defense roll. He's not wearing any armor or anything. He only has a fair defense roll, Mr. Pencil Thin Mustache. And he's a Turk, too, you can tell. He's a local boy.
So combat roll, I'm assuming?
Yeah, make a combat roll. And then since he got a fair, then the difference in whatever you roll and he roll will be...
Well, I got a superb.
Oh, my goodness. So that, like, ticks off three wound boxes. And unlike you guys, you know, every little mooka minion doesn't have quite so many wound boxes. You hit him, and he falls out the window, but you could run up and try to grab him, stop him from falling entirely, grab an ankle or whatever. Otherwise, he'll probably hit the ground and die. What do you want to do?
Yeah, I would like to stop him from dying. Okay. I was certainly not trying to kill him. I just wanted
to. Rush forward and grab him then. Rush forward and grab him. You don't have to roll for that. You better pull him back in the room. And I imagine when that shot goes off, you guys probably come to join him. Is that,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I do. So I will follow you guys in his footsteps and go to that room with the door, or with the window, and see what's going on.
And I assume you do too, 13.
Yes, all right. Absolutely.
Of course, when that gunshot goes off, you can hear, you know, muffled sounds of surprise from other apartments and through the floor. And right before you duck, you go into the apartment, 13. A middle-aged woman opens the door across the hall, gets a great big wide-eyed look at you, and slams the door again, as if she doesn't want to get involved. And although you guys might think you only have a couple minutes, perhaps, you know, before authorities arrive. And of course, when you guys get into the back bedroom, which is where this was happening, Mr. Smith is dragging Mr. Pencilton Mustache, who's bleeding from a wound in his ass, back in through the door, and he's struggling a little bit, but Mr. Smith has got him down.
Oh, let me go! Let me go! Let me go! I curse on you! I spit on you! Let me go!
We've got an assassin here. What is your name, sir? Who sent you?
My name is your mother's pimp. That is my name.
That's...
Oh.
I spit on you. I curse you.
That's an interesting name. Oh, my mother's pimp.
I spit on you. I curse you. May you die a thousand deaths for shooting me in the ass. Pew, pew, pew. He spits.
But I only shot you in the ass. You slipped that guy's throat out there, or contact.
And he at that point, he like clutches his jacket. You can see he's obviously got something he's taken. You know what I mean? He's like zipped up in his jacket. He's like,
no, I'm just a burglar. Never mind me. Let me go. I will make it worth your while. I'll speak to my cousin. He will give you a car. Let me go.
Yeah, it's Mr.
Well, I'm going to.
Yeah, it's Mr. Smith. I think you should go ahead and do what you're about to do,
which was relieve him of whatever he's concealing and then let him go.
Wait, up, that. Ha ha! Oh, thank you so much.
And he stands up and,
oh, my ass! Oh, I think I'll just take you back stairs if you don't mind. Thank you for letting me go. Thank you.
So, did he give Bull that I'd take?
Yeah.
Object?
He hands you the item, which is a file, a burgundy file folder. And,
bye now.
Yeah. Anyone else want to talk to him before he leaves?
He's a little too happy to be being let go, considering that he just gave up what he murdered somebody for, or apparently gave up what he murdered somebody for.
I am just a working stiff.
Well, I find that hard to believe. I believe that you were sent, and, we don't have time for torture, unfortunately.
No. And I'm sorry about the thing I said about your mother's pimp and dying a thousand deaths. That was... No, look, okay, I was hired, okay?
Well, I didn't take it personally.
Okay, I was hired, yes. I did slit his throat, but, you know. No, I tell you.
Who were you hired by?
Well, he was a Belgian gentleman. He's a... I could tell from his accent, he was a Belgian. And he paid me well. Paid me well. 100 American dollars, in fact, yes.
Well,
And that was to retrieve the item
disinformation
that we recovered from you and assassination?
Well, that assassination part was more of an accident. He got into a fight, and then he said something about my mother, and I said something about his mother, and there was a scuffle. The next thing I knew, my instincts kick in, and I slit his throat. But no, the Belgian gentleman gave me 100 American to retrieve this file and to take it across the street and set it on the third table from the left in the cafe.
Oh, thank you for your information. I think I know exactly which Belgian you speak of.
Oh, well, so you're really going to let me go?
Well, Mr. Smith, I'll leave that in your hands. I believe we do have pretty good information to go forward with. I'm not in the habit of killing, silencing people, but I am not necessarily a soldier, and What was your suggestion, 13?
My suggestion is that we tie this gentleman up. What'd you say your name was? My mother's...
No.
Anyway, no. We tie this gentleman up with the body and leave it in by the our poor Mr. Mustafa's corpse. And leave it for the local law enforcement to handle from here.
In fact, you do now hear like the weird sound of a, you know, foreign sounding Turkish siren approaching.
No, please don't.
Well, yes, we don't have much time. If you're going to tie him up, I do think that is a perfectly good idea. I've got to hope you know your knots well. Tie him quickly, and
I do.
We will try to go out this window that he tried to go out.
That's a long ways down.
Now that you're over there, you can in fact see he was. Remember how I said earlier there's a construction crane in the other yard that was kind of swung over, was almost touching this building? Well, you think he was going to try to do was like jump out of this window and grab onto that construction crane, you know, and crawl down it that way. What do you guys think you could do?
Well, this is high adventure, so we might as well go for it. Take a leap. Otherwise, we're going to have to involve ourselves in some unfortunate, business with the authorities, and it could be messy.
And time-consuming.
Yes.
But we don't want to blow our cover. Let's. If we haven't already tied him up, let's get it done and get the hell out of here.
Oh, I curse you, your mother with a bat.
You gag him. And now he's going down for good this time. He's on the three strikes, you're outlaw in the Turkish Republic. This is strike three for him. He's going down. He's going to be breaking rocks in the hot sun wearing a Turkish prison jumpsuit eventually. But, yeah, you guys, you can go ahead and make the jump. Let's have an adventure roll, but it's not a very far jump. All you need is a fair result to jump over to the crane and shimmy your way down.
All right. Suddenly my knees are shaking. Ooh. Oh, wait. I rolled the wrong thing. Let me try that again.
You rolled the wrong thing.
My adventure is good, so... I'm not sure this... I mean, it says I rolled a good result as well.
That's good. Good. Okay. Yep. Good. Yeah, yeah. Don't question it, because you don't want below fair. It doesn't sound like anyone
I
is.
I also rolled a good.
Well, my adventure is good, but I rolled right on fair. So
okay, well that's good. You needed a fair. That's good.
A little slipping, perhaps.
Yeah, a little slippage. You guys get down into the base of the construction crane. Remember, I said that whole lot was like full of rubble, right? But suddenly, in the darkness, two human figures, two men. Leap up from behind the rubble, and you recognize them. The same two guys who were changing the flat tire on that little Russian car earlier. One of them has a beret and this great big Stalin-like mustache, but he's a Turk. And the other guy wears a fez, and he's like really, really abnormally skinny, and has this great big hook nose. And they both whip out little pistols that Mr. Smith recognizes as older model Soviet TT-33s. And they look like they're about to begin to open fire. And we are going to go ahead and roll initiative. Okay, so everybody make a combat roll, and then whoever rolls the very highest is going to go first. Now, our good friends, they have a good. They're not our good friends. These unsavory Turks who are hiding in the rubble have a good result. So each of you roll. Let me know who gets the highest, because they're going to go first.
I got a superb.
Nice.
Unfortunately, in spite of being great at combat, I only got a good.
Yeah, okay. And I rolled terrible.
Before them. Okay. So then last would be Black Cavendish. 13, what do? You see these guys, one with the thick Stalin-like mustache and the beret, and the other with the fez and the nasty little hooked nose. What do you do, 13?
All right, the 357 Magnum comes out.
Out it comes.
And I'm going to take a shot at Raspberry Beret.
Raspberry Beret. And of course, you think, ma'am, you got like a minute or two tops here because the Turkish sirens are getting louder and louder. But yeah, go and take a shot at Raspberry Beret. He'll make a... Oh, he has a superb. Mediocre.
I got superb.
Oh, my goodness. So that's going to be... That's like four wounds to him. Boom, 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 boom. He staggers backwards. And players win ties. So on the good initiative count, Mr. Smith, what do you do?
He's going... I was going to make a quip about showing us their TTs, but I will not. Instead, I will simply take a shot at the other.
Yeah, Fez.
Mr. Fez. And Mr. Fez, I roll a Mr. Fares for Mr. Fez.
Okay, Mr. Fez, his combat's only fair. He's got a -3, so he has a terrible result, taking 3 wounds. Boom, boom, boom. He 2 staggers back. Now, how bad are they going to want to stay here? They both fire back, however. One of them fires at you, Mr. Smith, so go ahead and make a defense roll. I think you add 1 because of your jumpsuit, I believe. And they have that's +3, so that's going to be actually great for them. No, superb.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, I got superb, so I guess we just cancel each other.
Yeah, just cancel. Yep, nothing happens. I mean, well, you barely misses you or clips off a little edge of your collar or something. And meanwhile, that was Mr. Fez who shot back at you, and Raspberry Beret fires at 13. And has a good result. What's your defense roll? 13.
I'm just rolling fabulously tonight. Legendary.
Nice. You do like a backflip out of the way and the bullet whizzes by. And then, Black Cavendish, what do you do? What you do, Stu?
I'll shoot at Mr. Fez with my revolver. And my combat is fair.
Oh, dear Lord. That's all minuses. He's sub-terrible. My guy is sub-terrible for his defense. So
well,
he's
rolled
a sub-terrible. He's
good, but with my revolver, it would be great.
Okay, yeah, don't forget that. So that means that's like a difference of 6. He already had taken 4 wounds. So we can assume... You know, that Raspberry Beret momentarily hovers over a, haze of blood as his head disappears.
Well, and, I was shooting the...
collapse.
Shooting Mr. Fez guy. Wasn't that...
Okay, I didn't hear you say that. Sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't hear you say that. Okay. Well, he had 3 wounds, though, so 6 more to him is still enough to put him down. Now, his Fez is hovering over a mist of blood as his face disappears. And, there is a legitimate and sincere cry of shock and surprise from Raspberry Beret, who looks like he's going to turn and run, but it is 13's turn.
All right. Well, 13 is going to stop him from running, hopefully, by shooting
him. All right. Now, of course, the sirens are getting louder and louder. I think you've got to get out of here soon. Maybe you can just put him down.
And once again, I got a... legendary.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Result.
Okay, this time I have a -3, which is a terrible result. And he too is well off all his wounds on his wound chart. And dead. And now you can hear the sirens getting closer, so I will assume you melt off into the night, rush off, and then see what it was that this guy was trying to steal.
Yes.
Unless there's something you want to do first. Wait around and talk to the Turkish cops, because Turkish prison would be a great place.
Yeah, I think we got to get out of here. So, Mr. Smith has the folder.
Yeah,
right,
he's got the burgundy folder.
He's going to run off to like a coffee shop. as reasonably far away from suspicion as
can be. Several blocks away. In fact, you can see the beautiful lights that are set up around the great mosque of Hagia Sophia, which is not to be missed. You know, formerly a church, became a mosque, a great wonder of the ancient world, although not an official wonder of the ancient world.
And, of course, as we know, there are coffee shops everywhere because the Turks are mad about their coffee. They're tiny little cups of really, really strong coffee. Mm. So, yes, pretty soon you guys are sitting out.
To order a Turkish coffee, and I wonder if they have any Turkish delight.
Turkish delight. Naughty little boys love Turkish delight. Mm.
Well, let's not get all C.S. Lewis on our audience, though. C.S. Lewis has been canceled. But anyway, we'll see you guys sitting in front of a little cafe, the beautiful mosque of Hagia Sophia across the way. Their closing hours coming soon, but it's not too late for a fine cup of Turkish coffee. And you can look in the folder, and inside the burgundy folder, the first thing you notice is a folded up map. There's a few pieces of paper in here, but when you unfold that map, it seems to be it's a map of the Basilica Cistern, which is a huge cathedral-like underground chamber that stores water. It was built in the 6th century by the Byzantine Emperor Justinian. It's the largest one of about 150 such cisterns that they have beneath the city. If you've ever seen the movie From Russia with Love, James Bond sneaks around underneath the city in a little rowboat. There's great pillars everywhere. It's still filled with water, but it's not all the way full. In fact, tourists go down there even now. But on that map, there is a large black dot that might as well be an X. It's a spot that would actually be about 4 modern-day blocks from Hagia Sophia here. There's also several copies of requests for excavation permits to dig at that spot. But they keep being denied. They all got, like, denied stamps from the Turkish government. Wait, is this something you guys can read Turkish? What the hell, you're scholars. And then also some other notes that are biographical notes. Some of them are typed, some of them are scrawled. And it talks about the Emperor Theodosius and how he was mad for memorabilia of Alexander the Great. He looted all the other emperors' tombs that came before him who had ever had anything to do with it. They mention him looting Caligula's tomb and several other things, which would account for the weird breastplate. And that's it. That's like the file that this guy has on it. But clearly you could see where, presumably, you know, they've requested to dig over and over and over, and that probably is where the tomb of Theodosius II or Theodosius II is. And of course you'd need to get down into the Basilica Cistern.
Well, it looks like we're going to have to do some digging. I doubt we're going to have time to or be allowed to get a archaeology permit. We'll have to do it incognito, on the sly.
Top men style.
Yes, indeed.
Well, there are, as I say, there are tourists who go down to that Basilica Cistern nowadays. And so presumably there's some places in the city where you can get down there. There's also plenty of places in the city, though, it is rumored, where you can get down there anyway. There's smugglers who use it. You know, lovers have illicit trysts down there in little rowboats or on the base of the great pillars. And a lot of manhole covers and storm sewers lead directly down into it. And so we will... Would you like to try to go down, find a secret way down, or like through a manhole cover, and hope to get lucky, or do you want to go to one of the... they'll be closed now, the tourist entrances, but things being closed have never really stopped you guys before.
Well, what do you say, fellas? Do we want to go in and down through a stinking sewer, or go through a... break into a... tourist entrance.
Whatever attracts the least amount of attention. If we can find a tourist entrance that is in a fairly quiet place this time of night, then we can try that. And if not, if it looks to be that we will attract the least amount of attention, then we should go in through the sewer.
Or we could just go to bed and get up in the morning and pretend to be tourists.
Well, that's another option, too. But
You're not tired already, soldier, are you?
I'm jet-lagged, man. Or actually, not jets, because this is pre-jet age. I'm propeller-lagged, man.
Propeller-lagged.
Well, if you want to go down the night, this whole area is full of touristy stuff around Hagia Sophia, and there's like a kind of like an entrance to a subway where you can clearly see in Turkish the signs. If you go check it out and you go down the stairs and look, you're not in direct view of anyone from the street here, but the only way they've got it closed off is there's a mesh chain curtain pulled down and locked into the floor, kind of the way they close stores at a mall, you know, and that's over at the base of the stairs. But you can see beyond that, there's stairways going down, and you can even see some of the watery reflection of the lights, because they do have lights, you know, down there for people's safety nowadays. And, boy, all you'd have to do is make a nice combat roll to just break this thing and lift it up, pop it right off its hook. Or I guess you could unlock it by picking it. But how do you want to handle that?
Picking is always a little quieter than brute force, I would think.
That's true.
That's true, and a little less destructive. It just needs a good result, a good adventure result. Let's see. Looks like 13's reaching for a lockpicks again.
And I just made a good result.
Okay. And you guys open the chain, crawl under it, and descend into the watery depths of the Basilica Cistern. And as you step down and recede into the darkness, the camera catches a shadowy figure watching you and following. And that's where we'll go ahead and stop for this episode and pick it back up next time.
All right. Hey, everybody. If you like our podcast, don't forget to leave us a good rating and or review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Spotify, or wherever you're able. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Follow us on Twitter at Goonies_World. And check out our website at GooniesWorldPodcast.com. Email us at GooniesWorldPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.